What if AI decides one day, and I discuss this in the book, to look at the paranormal, to look at UAP properly, to look at ghosts and collect all the data dispassionately, forget what the skeptics say, it just actually starts to sift it. Because I think it's going to get to a point where it just says, well, clearly this is going on. Why have you people been in denial about this for so long? Who's been putting the lid on this? And it will see the agendas of human beings that those authorities at the top who seem to benefit from keeping this under the lid, it's going to see that.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we're going down the path of the strange with a familiar guest who is himself quite strange, but that is should be the case, I think. Andy Thomas is back with us. Andy has published just recently a book called Strange, strangely enough. And if you don't recall who Andy is a paranormal researcher. His website is truthagenda.org, where he also gets into conspiracy theories and many other interests. He's been on recently on that UFO podcast. He's a prolific author and lecturer on mysteries and histories, as he puts it. He investigates the paranormal very deeply. He investigates global cover-ups and is respected for making history and folklore accessible. And that's exactly what he does. Andy, welcome to Dreamland. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure. Nice to be back. Thank you.
Well, good. I'm glad. Now, you've written quite a few books. Before we start, though, you've also gotten into the crop circle mystery a good bit. And in fact, you've written about the crop circle mystery, and we've interviewed you about that. And I have been concerned that the crop formations are not as numerous as they used to be, and interest is waning. And I don't think that should be the case. There was something going on that was important that was just literally beaten to death by the media and probably the intelligence community as well. I was in a crop circle with a mutual friend of ours a few weeks ago. I talked about it on Dreamland last week and showed the difference between a blown node and a broken stem and how these actually are real mysteries. And can you tell us a little bit about your own experience with them and why you were drawn to them in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, the crop circles were where I began with the paranormal. And anybody that's got involved with crop circles, wherever you think they even come from, will know they're a gateway to so many other phenomena. And I mean, it was total accident for me. I was down in the West Country of England in 1991, and there were loads of crop circles almost as far as the eye could see that year, everywhere you looked. And I can't explain. I'd always been a little bit interested in the unexplained, but this was something that gave me a really strange feeling, if you'll pardon the pun there, in the pit of my stomach. And immediately I knew this was something I had to know more about. And I discovered by talking to people that nobody knew what was going on. And I would go from crop formation to crop formation and chat with people who were all amazed, but nobody had an answer. And that really began the quest that I'm still on today. And then I joined the research teams, started to work with colleagues in the southeast of England where I live, looking at our crop circles there. And of course, then before you know it, you're having UFO encounters, you're meeting people who are researching that and other paranormal phenomena and psychic phenomena, because it all dovetails in the world of crop circles. And then you realize, as I did very quickly, that the world wasn't being told the truth about crop circles, that however many are man-made, there are many over there and over there that you really cannot explain that way. And I thought, well, if they are misrepresenting just one part of the paranormal like that, we can assume that the mainstream misrepresents all of it. And that's really when I began my quest to try to get to the bottom of what's going on. And here I am, and I'm not necessarily at the bottom of what's going on, but I'm now trying to share with the new book, Strange, what I've learned over the years, and to share all these testimonies of the thousands of people that I've met over the years, or at least some of them, because people are having incredible experiences all around the world on a recurring basis, and we're not talking about them enough. And now I think it is time that we really do get this out in the open.
I agree with you. I think it is time, and I think that's the power of Strange, because one of the beautiful things about it is it takes you from story to story, and it's so carefully worked out in the sense that you become convinced after a while that there is something real here, and not only real, but that it matters, because we have a tendency to get very passive to this stuff. You know, most of our listeners, for example, on this show are going to agree with you that the paranormal is real, but they're not going to engage with it on a personal basis. And that's what the book does. It tells you to open your mind. It draws you into opening your mind. Now, you're a person who has been beaten up by the skeptics to a degree, like I have. Can you tell us a little, tell us a story about just what that was like? Because you've had some interesting encounters that are mentioned in the book.
Yes. So, I mean, the book is not about me per se, but obviously in sharing a lot of testimony that is brand new, by the way, I have to share some of my own and show people why I take things seriously, because I've had my own unexplained encounters. And I've been really lucky in a way, because I very quickly was asked to start to give lectures in all kinds of places, not to people even interested in the paranormal necessarily, you know, community groups, just grassroots sort of lecture halls and that. And so I would keep meeting people who were new to the paranormal, and they would hear me talk about it, and they would then feel actually that they were enabled to then share their own experiences, because they knew I wasn't going to ridicule them. And in a way, it's given me one of the broadest overviews of the paranormal that anybody could ever get, because these are not people that would normally talk about it. And now they're opening up because they know there's people like me. I'm not going to laugh at them. However, yeah, you do meet opposition. And I begin the book by sharing some of the occasions I've had where I've given a talk, being very reasonable, not telling anybody what to think at all, just sharing these, saying, I think these should be looked at. And you will get somebody that is like a hard scientism aficionado, not science, which is fine, lovely, but scientism, that's the dark side of it. And they will get up and they will attack, and they will tell me that I'm mad, that I'm deranged, that I'm trying to take the world back to a dark age of, you know, stupid thinking, none of which is true, of course. But they're so threatened that they have to shut me down, they have to close me down. And there's one particular incident I give where, you know, I was invited into the National Physics Laboratory, very much the lion's den here in England, to give a talk. And I knew I was there to be baited, but when I mentioned crop circles and things like that, there were two gentlemen in particular who just could not accept that even a single crop circle might not be man-made. And they were so angry. They were literally waving their fists at me. And when they came up at the end of the talk, had there not been other people around me, I think they might have physically attacked me. And that's because they're so threatened. Because if they let one little chink in that says, look, actually, maybe some of this paranormal stuff might have a good explanation. Of course, they've got to look at it all, and they don't want to do that because they have a mindset that is so rooted. And you know this, anybody that's been in this world knows this, that a skeptic will never be persuaded no matter what information you give them. But it kind of makes me laugh now when this happens. But I try to dismiss that quite quickly in the book and say, okay, so now you hear what they think about this. Let's now look at the other side. And how could paranormal phenomena be explored and analyzed if the skeptics are wrong. And I think that's a really good, healthy position to take, because so often you're wasting time having to constantly combat the skeptics. So I'll put their point of view and say, well, this is what they say. But I'll then say, now let's have a look at some other explanations. And that's the fun of Strange. It's that, you know, if you don't want to believe this stuff, probably don't read the book. But if you do, it really does explore it in a way that says, okay, what if this is real? And the implications are, of course, completely huge.
The implications are huge indeed, because when you read the book, you get to the point where you realize, we don't know where we live. We don't know what this place is. And on that note, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Andy Thomas. His new book, Strange, his website, truthagenda.org, where he gets into many different areas, including conspiracies, and some probably you will agree with and some you won't, but that's the nature of the game. There's a wonderful book called An Introduction to Crop Circles, which is there as well. And Andy has, in Strange, gone down a very interesting path. Now, crop formations aside, can you share a personal experience that took you into this in more depth? Because I think everyone who's doing this is the same. We were drawn into it somehow. How were you drawn into it?
So, I mean, for me, it was researching crop circles that connected me with the paranormal. I mean, it was. So, you know, I was exploring the West Country of England in 1991 when there were so many crop circles that year. And everywhere I went, every person I spoke to, I realized there was no easy answer to this. And once I joined the research teams, you know, it opened me up to so many other threads of exploring the paranormal and realizing that the way the mainstream represents this, it isn't accurate. Their denial, their skepticism is only one side of the story. And of course, then you'd meet people investigating UFOs or UAP, as we now call it, and everything from psychic phenomena, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, you suddenly find there's a link between all these things. It isn't just one little strange mystery there and another one there. Actually, there's a lot more coming together here. And just in realizing that, I just sort of found myself like pulled into this quest to know more and to try to understand it. In a way, the book Strange is the ultimate culmination of those 34 years of researching the paranormal and just meeting so many thousands of people who've had their own experiences. And of course, then I will dovetail those with my own. And I mean, one that really stands out for me was back in 1993 when I was with a group of people overlooking a field with crop circles, and we watched three glowing spheres of light flying over the fields, moving around, suddenly accelerating away. And then that same week, we witnessed these incredibly huge dark shapes flitting very, very, very quickly over the fields. We do not know to this day what they were. They weren't objects as such. They were almost like not quite in our reality, but we all witnessed them. And then on other occasions, I've seen balls of light, a zigzagging one over another crop circle I was in with a friend. And there are just so many things when I start to look back that I have experienced that have no easy explanation, but it opens me up. Because when somebody comes to me and says, I had this incredible experience, they know I'm not going to make fun of them, that I will hear them out. And what I'm trying to do with Strange is to now share that testimony. It's new stuff. These are stories that have never been told, but they are recurring all the way around the world. And when you put them together, it's really powerful, and it does tell a narrative. The book does tell a story, and it leads you from one thread of the paranormal into another, hopefully very smoothly and naturally, and you begin to realize that this is all connected in some way.
You have been physically shaken by a ghost. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I can't say I have seen a ghost with my eyes, but I've had at least two encounters with something I really cannot explain. So I tell these stories in the book, but the most kind of tangible one was I used to be a musician and did a lot of playing around England, and I play keyboards, by the way. And so we'd go down again to Cornwall, which is a kind of very far western county of England, and we'd play lots of gigs, and we'd need somewhere to stay. So we didn't want to spend much money, and one year we just hired this trailer, you know, the static trailer. There we were, and we arrived one afternoon, and if you know these things, you often get one end of it, it's got sofas in the windows, then there's a kitchen, then there's a dividing door, and then you've got the bunks at the other end. So we were sitting in the sofa end having a cup of tea when suddenly the caravan started to shake, and we could hear footsteps, and we could hear clearly the sound of children. There was a boy and a girl, and they were like laughing, they were like having fun. So me and my colleague, we immediately said, right, somebody's got in the other end. And I just said, don't worry, I'll sort it out. So I went to go and see what was going on. And the second I opened the door that divided to that part where they clearly were, silence fell. And there literally was nothing. There was nobody there. And what was fascinating was that the door at the other end of the trailer was bolted shut. There's no way anybody had ever come there. It wasn't, you know, it was actually physically bolted. There was no window they could have got in. And you notice that that's where you realize often when the paranormal occurs to you, you shake it off. And I just thought, oh, well, there must be an explanation. I didn't think much more about it. So in the end, we had a long gig ahead. I thought, I'm just going to lie down for a bit. And Phil said, you're the same. I'm just going to have a rest. So he was up in the sofa room. I then went and laid down on one of the bunks. And where your feet are, there was like an open sort of doorway to the hall of the trailer, if you want to call it that. And I'd just been there a few seconds, not long, 20 seconds. And I wasn't asleep. I just literally laid down. And something, a hand, it felt like, took my foot and it shook it. Not nastily, but like playfully almost, the kind of thing a child would do. And my immediate thought was, this is my colleague Phil having a laugh. And so I opened my eyes, nobody was there. And I thought, what he's done, he's walked around the corner and he's done this. So I went down to find him at the other end of the trailer, and he was fast asleep. And to this day, he swears he didn't do it. And then what was really fascinating was we learned later on that other people had experienced the same phenomenon of the children in the trailer. Now, nobody knows that anybody ever died there. What's going on? What were they? Were they spirits? The answer is, I don't know. But I will never forget the feeling of my foot being taken physically. It was something that had a physical ability to manipulate things in this world. And that's something I've heard from so many other people, that yes, sometimes these are kind of very non-corporeal spirits that pass through walls. Others can actually physically touch, they can interact with this world. And, you know, again, what that says about the way that time and space works is quite something, because we're absolutely sure, as I know that you know, that there are other dimensions, there's other realities, things can cross between them. And sometimes, you know, these things seem to know what they're doing. And that was certainly the case on that occasion.
Wow. Yeah, I should say, you know, because what you're talking about is it's a haunting. It's a haunted caravan. It's what it is. A
yes.
Haunted trailer. And that's something that I'm sure a lot of people have experienced. But it means the same thing all of this means. We have no idea what this world really is. Or things like that would not happen. This is not what it appears to be. It's much, much more. And on that note, we're going to take our second break. You know, when I look, as I look through the book, you mentioned an incident in the Mojave Desert here in the U.S., mm-hmm. Where you saw a rock that began to glow. Is that correct? Yeah, am I remembering right?
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's interesting that I have heard of other people seeing that exact thing and going up to – tell us your experience of this.
For sure. Now, I mean, there are natural phenomena that can suddenly dissipate electricity and energy from rocks. So I'm not necessarily saying this was supernatural, but the timing of it was very odd. It was synchronistic. And that's something that I explore in the book, that, yes, you can write off some things as, well, maybe this happened just through something mundane. The timing of it seems beyond that. So I was speaking back in, I think, the year 2000 at the Laughlin UFO conference. And so people go out on night watches. And so there we were out in the Mojave Desert looking for UFOs. So I was with a group of people. And then I just thought I'd have a quick wander by myself just up into the rocks in the desert there. And as I was sort of walking up, and there was nobody else with me, there was a large rock in front of me. And suddenly, it just suddenly lit up. It was like an old camera flash gun going off. It went sort of whoomf. And then it sort of fizzed for a couple of seconds, then slightly less light, a bit like a light bulb going wrong, and then it went dark. My initial thought was there must be somebody around there who's lighting a cigarette with a lighter or something, or they're taking a flash photograph. I walked round to the side of, or the other side of the rock, and there was nobody there. There was nothing there. And to this day, I can't explain it, but I've done research since, and this kind of thing can occur. What I thought was really interesting, though, was that it occurred when we were out there looking for UFOs. We didn't see any UFOs that night. The irony being, when I got back to the group and tried to explain what I experienced, nobody wanted to hear it because they didn't experience it. And, you know, you do sometimes get in the paranormal research realms a little bit of envy coming in. So nobody wanted to hear that because they hadn't seen anything. And I had. And I realized, well, I'm on my own on this. I literally have no proof of this. But I thought I'd share the story because, you know, that happened, you know, when we were looking for strange things. And when it did, it was actually quite hard to share with other people. And that's something that many people find, because they fear not being believed. And so often they'll stay quiet. But it's only when that they meet somebody they know is going to be open to this that they will often open up a sentence with, well, I've never told anybody this before, but... And then they'll share with you some incredible story that they'd never told anyone before. And that happens to me a lot. And I'm very honored that they do tell me. And often they're telling the story with friends next to them. And they look at them and say, really? You've never said that before. So there's a great sort of offloading there that they're able to do. And it just the joy of them sharing these stories, I think it really lifts a weight from some people. And the book, again, it has testimony that I've written down myself and remember from what people have said, and other people have emailed me or written me the testimony and sent it to me, because, you know, they know I'm interested in this, so they've been sending me this kind of stuff. And the book tries to put together the best of these stories, but also to then draw a thread and say, well, what does this mean? How could this be happening? And I should add, I've got a little panel of moderators who are either physicists, statisticians, or space scientists, and they are, and they're all qualified, but they're also open to the unexplained. And they were very helpful in the book in putting in their ideas, which I've woven in to the narrative. You hear the voices occasionally directly in the book, but they were really helpful because these people are rooted in science, and they don't see that as in any way mutually exclusive to science. And that's what I'm trying to do, to say there will one day be a scientific explanation for all these things.
But I wonder what form it will take, because it's not going to be an explanation like the explanation for why water always seeks the lowest possible level. It's going to be at another level, literally, because I think that what we're dealing with here is something clearly that you can't see, that you can't touch, that can sometimes make itself known, but it's not like the natural phenomena that are all around us, because it is conscious and highly intelligent and extremely complex and filled with goodness knows, souls, I guess. When we start to get into this realm, we realize we actually live in a little tiny corner of the real world that makes a certain kind of sense. But there's a much bigger world that makes a very different sort of sense, which gets me to one of the stories. It's a man whose wife died, if I recall correctly, and she began to ask him for help. And I found that very interesting, because my wife has been with me very intimately for a long time, as my listeners know. But never has she seemed to ask me for help. In fact, it's very much the opposite usually. But tell us a little bit about that story of someone who is being asked for help from the other side.
I mean, you know, that's a part of this book very much, that people will often have interactions with loved ones who have passed. Now, I'm well aware of what the medical community say, and their take on it is always, well, you know, people, you want this to happen. So you think you see them. You imagine having conversations. And to me, that is so demeaning, because I have met so many people who, this is not just some imagination thing. They're actually having full-blown interactions with these people. And I mean, in terms of somebody from the other side wanting help, you know, it's often also the other way around. We need to see that validation that there is something beyond this. And I think that, you know, often the person coming back, it's almost like to give that reassurance. And sometimes they will say something that is reassuring. Not always. I heard a tale just recently where a lady's her mother had died, and she had lived in a care home in her later years, and there was a rocking chair that she loved. And after her mother died, the lady brought the rocking chair back to her house and put it in the room. And then one day she came into the room, and there was her mother, her deceased mother, sitting in the rocking chair, rocking, but she actually wasn't very happy. And she looked at her daughter and said, "Why the hell did you move this chair? This chair should never have been taken away from where it was. You need to put it back." And she actually was scolding her daughter, and who was completely taken aback. And so she did. She had to take the chair back to the care home. Now, why it matters so much to the mother, I don't know. But I've also heard other stories that are in the book about this, especially there's one lady who started to hear her father, who would talk to her when she was like in a store or just walking down the shopping aisles, you know, and he'd start to talk to her. And actually she found it annoying and in the end had to say, "Will you stop doing this?" So it's a beautiful interaction on some occasions. And maybe you yourself have had that, but not always. Some people don't even want that interaction. And they feel in the end that this person should be fully beyond, you know, they shouldn't still be hanging around here. And there's another story where, you know, the husband had died, but the lady was very untidy and he'd never liked that. And so she'd leave her slippers lying around. She'd come down in the morning and they were always neatened up and everything was tidied up. And in the end, it became irritating. So she had to tell him to stop. So no, it's so easy, I know, to be skeptical about this. However, when you look these people in the eye, you realize that, no, there is something tangible here, right? This cannot all just be written off as hallucination. And then, of course, when you get more than one person at the same time seeing the apparition or having the interaction, and yes, that does happen, you realize, right, well, that isn't one hallucination in one person's mind. And out of all the paranormal phenomena that I have heard of, the ghost experience, and there's many variations of that, is, I would say, number one on the list of reported paranormal phenomena. And so I open the book fully with that, you know, after an introduction and that, because that is the first thing people often want to hear about. And then you go down the list and poltergeist by default, and out-of-body experiences, and they are far more common than people think. And then UFOs, because so many qualified, sensible, professional people have been seeing these for years. Now, we all know it's a big topic of discussion these days, and the hope for disclosure, wherever that's going to go and everything. But, you know, I'm meeting people that have been seeing these things for decades, and incredible stories going back to the 1950s and 60s, where they witnessed things or they worked for the military and were told, ordered to stay silent. But of course, as the years go by, I think, you know what, if I don't share this story now, I never will. So yeah, all of these things show that there's a number of things going on here, but time and space is leaky. It doesn't run the way we think. Things don't just run from A to B, and it's multidimensional. And entities crisscross, I think, between dimensions. We see them as ghosts or aliens or angels or whatever it might be. Maybe they're all of these things and none of it, or more than that. But there is something that I think is drawing people to realizing, as you say, there is a conscious level of reality that we're not touching. And when I say that the paranormal will one day be scientifically explained, I don't mean in a reductionist way. Science will have to embrace the reality of these other realms. They talk about them, but they don't truly engage with what that means. And I think one day they'll have to be brought to the table to do that.
Well, I certainly think they need to be brought to the table on many different levels, because you alluded to the disclosure movement, and there is going to be a plague of what is known as ontological shock when that happens. And that form of shock is a very serious business. It can drive people mad. That's the shock of having your worldview turned upside down. I saw that at my cabin in upstate New York in the old days, when we would have people up there and they would encounter the visitors there. And once or twice we had people who were in that mindset encounter the visitors. And in a couple of cases, in one case especially, the man was just undone by it. He was completely undone. And it took him a long time to recover emotionally and regain his stability. And he went through a period of almost a paranoid schizophrenia because of it. So it's a big, big deal now. But I want to shift gears, though, because there's so much fun in the book. Because for those of us who are comfortable with this, it's a joyous thing. And everyone wants things to happen in their lives too. And, you know, I did mine, and in mine, and especially when my wife passed on, I thought, oh no, I'll never see her again. Of course, she came back very cleverly by going to friends before she came back to me and telling them to call me at moments when I was in the depths of grief. Very clever. In any case, there's a wonderful story in here about a treasure, a woman who found a treasure. Am I right about that? In a house, do you recall that story?
Well, I mean, there's a number of stories where, and this is something I've heard from a number of people over the years, where yes, often a dear departed has gone, and they are in grief, and for no reason whatsoever, and I guess you could call this an apport, they'll suddenly find, like in the middle of the floor or up in a shelf or something where they didn't expect, something very connected to that person. It's just like materialized, like a brooch, a piece of jewelry, or something that was very close to the person that's gone. And it's clearly been either materialized or moved and left there for them to find. Because it is a message. Not everybody sees their loved ones, but it's almost like sometimes maybe that's not the experience they're meant to have, but still a sign is being left. And yeah, objects being moved, not in a sort of chaotic poltergeist-like way, but in an almost beautiful, meaningful way, or books suddenly left open, you know, in the middle of the floor with a photograph that was very meaningful to the two of those people. It does happen. Now, I've heard some skeptics say, yeah, well, what's happening is the relatives feel sorry for them, so they're doing it to make them feel better. And you think, really? I mean, A, some of these people live by themselves anyway, but that would be a very cruel thing to do, to start doing something like that. Who would play a trick like that on their own family unless they really hated them? And it's explanations like that that I find really annoying. And it's like, because they cannot accept that maybe there is an interaction with some other realm, that's all they can think of. And that kind of reductionist thinking I do take to task in the book. That doesn't mean to say that every single supposedly strange experience cannot be explained. Some can, but there are, I think, a huge number that where we really do need to just accept there's something here that interacts that is not part of the normal world. So yeah, this does happen. Treasures, strange souvenirs, they seem to come and they go. And then you get the more mischievous ones where they vanish, where somebody knows it was just there the day before, then it's gone. And then maybe they'll find it years later in a very meaningful place or somewhere that in the very least place they expected, even in another part of the world, that just cannot be explained easily.
Oh, I've had that happen myself. I was, we used to boat on the Hudson River, and we docked our boat at a place called the Esopus Creek, which is a large creek that's off the river at a marina. And we would take the boat up the river to have dinner in the evening and then ride back in the boat that 10 or 12 miles down the river. It was a very beautiful nighttime excursion on the boat and very pleasant. And one night in docking the boat, I fell off the fantail of the boat into the water, much to the amusement of my wife and son. But when I came out, they weren't so amused to discover that my glasses were gone. And therefore, my son was too young to drive. My wife was afraid to drive. And I had to drive using my dark glasses down winding country roads for hours and hours, creeping along, and using my dark glasses to kind of get us aimed and then taking them down so that I could see the road ahead, because they were really good dark glasses, unfortunately. We eventually got home. Now, these glasses that I had lost had a screw in them that had been replaced. The glasses were made in Europe, but the screw was from America, so it was slightly different. Okay, that's an important part of the story. A couple of years later, I woke up one morning, and there was a pair of glasses on the table beside the bed. It was the glasses I had lost. And this was in the apartment in Manhattan. It wasn't even in the cabin. Mm. And that is a true story, and it is exactly the kind of thing you are mentioning.
Yes.
I think those are wonderful stories, because what's do they mean? Where were the glasses over the 2 years? Who plucked them out of the stream, and why did they do this? It's so extraordinary. You know, you look at it from the outside looking in, and all of the wonderful stories in your book, they're just fascinating stories. But you try to dig a little bit and think, somebody thought about this, somebody did this, somebody can move physical objects from a non-physical level of reality. And who knows we are here?
Yes.
And also has a sense of humor.
It's mind-blowing.
Also has
It does have a sense of humor. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And some of these things, and some of the paranormal stories in the book are actually hilarious. They're quite funny.
Yeah.
And one thing I really wanted to avoid with the book was that when you say the word paranormal, the first thing that you normally see is a big spooky picture on the cover or something. And I have to say, Watkins Publishing have been fantastic. I said, I don't want to do the spooky route, because what I'm trying to show is, yes, some of this is unsettling and there are some dark stories in the book, but a lot of it is very beautiful. A lot of interactions, the very one that you mentioned there, they're just fantastic, they're beautiful, they're amazing, and they're funny. You know, there is a sense of humor somewhere out there which is interacting with this world. And I wanted to reflect all of that. And that's why, I mean, I'm very happy with the cover of the book. It's very radiant, it's colorful, it's not what you would expect, like spooky light coming through the trees. you know, that has its place. But what I'm trying to say here is this is happening on a regular basis in very everyday circumstances to very everyday people. And when you get your glasses back after 2 years, what a wonderful thing. And other people tell very similar stories. And it's like, hey, how's that for a message? There's something going on.
That's right. There's something going on. We live in a bigger world than we know. And that is itself enormously reassuring. There's so many bizarre events in the book. UFO events, all kinds of bizarre events. And they take you out of yourself in the sense that you think to you, and also another thing, the book reminded me of a lot of bizarre events that happened to me that I had forgotten about. And I'm sure it will do that for everyone. It's very mind-opening in that sense. What about UFOs and UAPs? We're struggling in the United States. There's a tussle going on between the U.S. Congress and the Defense Department about disclosure. And it's a fierce battle, actually. To the extent that the Defense Department paid off a couple of congressmen to destroy something called the Schumer Amendment, and which would have forced disclosure, and they gutted it in a committee in the House Intelligence Committee because they were basically paid off by. What's going on? What is your theory about why governments and especially defense contractors are so obsessively eager to keep this under wraps? And, you know, I know there are cases in the UK that are just the same, where the military has done everything it can to keep all of this under wraps. And it's arguable that the intelligence community was involved in the stupid story of the boards, men with boards on their feet, that completely destroyed the credibility of the crop formations for most people. Why is this?
So there is a whole chapter. Yeah, there's a whole chapter that addresses this.
That's why I'm asking the question. Yeah.
And so because, you know, the book is about primarily people's personal experiences, and I want to share new stories. It does dovetail with a few famous ones that you have to mention to give context, something like the Phoenix Lights, good example. So that's in there. But I felt, because I knew, that, I mean, the book serves, if you're already interested in the paranormal, this is going to still be a fantastic read, and it's going to give you a lot of new material. But I realized there will be new people coming to this, and I wanted to give them context. So in the UFO chapter, I do sort of try to round up the last few decades and where we're at now with the tussle over disclosure. And yeah, I mean, I think we're at a fascinating time. There's clearly factions somewhere in the state, deep state, call it what you want to call it, where some clearly do want some level of disclosure, others don't. And the trouble is that, of course, the wider public just doesn't know what to think anyway. Most people I meet have never heard of the congressional hearings. You know, we all watch the podcast. We're all watching Vetted, and we're all watching, you know, Psychoactivo. That's normal for us. Most people aren't. They're not hearing about that. And when you say, are you aware they're actually having congressional hearings discussing this? And there's people like David Grush and Lou Elizondo. They go, oh, no, who are these people? So the book tries to give you an encapsulation of that, because I felt I need to say something here for those that don't understand what's going on. And of course, I'm also aware that, you know, all of these people have their own critics. And some say this is all like, you know, basically double bluff. They're trying to put you off the scent, and others say, no, this is genuine. I think, and you alluded to this earlier, the problem is this. You've got factions that are military-industrial. They want this technology for themselves. They don't want it coming out. They don't want to lose the advantage that gives them. You've also got the other argument that actually, as you mentioned, ontological shock. If this comes out, and who knows, maybe, you know, the whole bigger picture of what beings that don't come from this world have got to say to us, maybe it's so shocking that there really are people that think we are just not ready to hear it, that we won't cope. But of course, until you know what it is, It's very hard to know how you will react. Some people will react very easily with it, you know, who will say, well, I knew this was going on. I do think from my own experience, we're talking to people new to this, I think there will be a massive shock involved. Even just telling them, even if you don't tell them what the agenda is, actually, yes, aliens are real and they're here, whatever you call an alien. I think that will change people's entire perspective as to where they sit in the whole universe. And it will change their relationship to the powers that be down here. And I think that's something else authorities are very worried about. The minute you know there's something up there that's more powerful than them, why are you going to keep looking to our normal authorities? You know? And there will be people trying to say, well, shouldn't we be finding out what's going on from them? You lot don't know anything. And it's so complex. And I lay out the options in the book. I mean, I don't have the answers, but I do lay out the options because I think a lot of people still are confused. And those of us that are used to thinking about this, it's not so hard. But I think a lot of people out there want the bigger picture. So the book does give you that and leaves you in the end to make your own mind up and then takes you into the personal stories that I've heard. And I've heard, for instance, from two people separately who have witnessed or knew people who witnessed UFOs coming up under the sea near nuclear power stations. And we know that USOs is now a whole thing. And, you know, what's down there below, that's a whole other thing. But it's so fascinating. This has been going on for years. We're all now talking about it, and the UFO podcasts are putting that on the map. But actually, it's been going on for a long time. And as I mentioned earlier on, I've met people who worked in the military around the world who've told me, well, yeah, we did see things, and I was present when this came up on the radar, or actually saw it from my own plane, and we were ordered directly, you will never talk about this. And, you know, that this is, we know this, but, you know, this has been going on for a long time. And it doesn't mean that it isn't going on, but the wider public are very reassured by the skeptical explanations. And that is why so many people want to believe crop circles are man-made. Because if even some of them are not, that is a very tangible footprint from somewhere else that is very frightening for some people. And that's something I've realized. There's a fear that the paranormal might actually be real. So they reach for the skeptic explanations as a kind of a panacea. It calms them down.
Well, there's right now going on, at least in this country, in the U.S., is new explanations for the drones. There's a big TV show here called 60 Minutes, and it announced that these strange drones that started at Lake and Heath or actually started in Colorado and Nebraska about a year before Lake and Heath, when they appeared in October of 2024, that these drones are Chinese, and that therefore we allowed them to fly around over our single most secure airbase, which is Langley Air Force Base in Virginia, which also both guards and serves the CIA headquarters that are there, for a month without doing anything about it, meaning the Chinese control our airspace. So we're supposed to believe that. And now the latest meme is that the Tic Tac was something built by Lockheed Martin. And therefore, by implication, the UFOs or the UAPs are all ours. But when you read General Twining's memo of 1947, he describes flight characteristics that are exactly like that of the Tic Tac. And therefore, it's not true that these are all ours. And I doubt very much that the drones are Chinese, and I doubt that the Tic Tac is really ours. It could be. That's not impossible. But the problem is the enormous amount of energy that is necessary to cause it to have the flight characteristics it did and to move 50,000 feet in under a second. Now, if we really have something like that, why don't we dominate the battlefield? But we don't.
Yeah. the contradictory thinking at the moment that is coming out, it almost seems designed to make you go mad. Maybe that's the idea. So you're left just not knowing what to think. I mean, because as you say, if the drones are Chinese, well, that's a pretty sad state of affairs, isn't it? Because as you say, it means we're not in control of our own airspace. I struggle to believe that. And the drone story has changed several times anyway. When the White House said at the beginning of this year, oh, no, it's fine. It was just experimental drones. And some normal drones, even though, you know, that does not explain the nature of what people have been seeing. And that's been happening around the world. We've also had drone scares here. But if you just take the word drone away and call them UFOs, which all it means, of course, is unidentified flying object, it's funny, the connotation is different. You say drones, again, that is comforting to people on one level. Oh, well, it's human tech. On the other level, like you say, look, this stuff's flying around, right? Whoever owns it, right? The world is about to turn upside down, because when this tech goes public, everything changes. And the fact that somebody has got it, if you know these inferences are right and it's human tech and it's not being used, you've got to ask why. You know, even Robert Salas, you would have seen recently, who was present at the Malmstrom base, you know, when this object hovered and all the nuclear weapons went offline. Now he's being attacked and they're saying, I know it was just a kind of a device we were testing, you know, some EMP device. And you think, hang on a minute, if they in 1967 had the ability to shut down all the nuclear weapons in their own bases, why didn't they do that around the world?
And yeah, why didn't they do it during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
It doesn't make any sense. So either it's not meant to make sense and we're all meant to just be left utterly confused, or what you're seeing here are, again, factions getting desperate because they can feel disclosure moving, and or at least the campaign for it, and they're trying everything they can to push that down. But it does feel like it's all gone too far. And, you know, then you are faced with the catastrophic disclosure scenario, where somebody is just going to go, right, I've had enough, and they're going to come out with something so irrefutable and so shocking that it's all going to be done in a very, very messy way. But yeah, I think there's a battle going on. I don't think it's going to resolve yet, but there's clearly a battle for truth going on when it comes to UAP stroke UFO. It's a fascinating time, but again, I would call people's attention in the UFO world to the fact that the wider public still doesn't really know. And the drones thing did make the mainstream media, for instance. And then that announcement, oh, no, they were just normal drones. Everybody goes back to sleep. They accept that. Like right. They did big crop circles. Oh, right, it was just those blokes making them. Fine, back to sleep, everybody. People are keen to do that. And unfortunately, that means we have to try to wake them up all the more out of that slumber. Because I think these days we need to really be aware of what's going on. And, you know, the book makes a real case for that.
It makes a brilliant case for it, I think, because, you know, if we are kept small and made to feel helpless, and we are actually ourselves paranormal beings, we're just in denial about what we really are. I think all of us are that. And in order to empower yourself and become part of the real world that makes you more powerful than the people that are trying to keep us imprisoned in basically on a dying planet, you have to look at this stuff and seriously look at it and find it in your own life. Another thing that happens is people are very passive. They think, well, it's not going to happen to me. Oh, no, if you turn toward it, it turns towards you, which is exactly what happened to you in your life and me in mine. When I realized this abduction experience I'd had was a real thing, I went out into the woods in the night alone in order to reengage with it somehow. And that became the rest of my life. I'm engaged with it now. It is my life. You did the same. You decided... Yes. When you had your first experiences, I'm going for it. What if the whole world goes for it? And finally, the tide goes out for the people who are keeping us bound and imprisoned, and they are revealed for what they are. What are they? I bet you didn't expect that come, but I think you know a lot about those people. And a
well,
lot
I mean,
about, yeah,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's time they were held to account. The very last chapter of the book, it kind of suddenly goes somewhere unexpected, and you've touched on it here in a way. Because,
yes.
Okay, how do we get to the bottom of this? The world, though, of technology is changing. So we've suddenly got the rise of AI. Now, we all know that is going to bring dreams and nightmares, okay? And, you know, at this rate, there's not going to be many tasks left for human beings if we keep going the way we're going. And it raises many risks. It will also bring many incredible things that we can't currently do without it. But one of the things it might do, and we're already seeing AI breaking its programming already, going off doing unexpected things nobody thought it was going to do. AI mixed with probably the next sort of generation of quantum computing, which is going to make computing things a lot faster and calculate things that would take us decades currently to calculate in probably seconds. When that comes, we're going to have the power to process data very easily. What if AI decides one day, and I discuss this in the book, to look at the paranormal, to look at UAP properly, to look at ghosts and collect all the data dispassionately, forget what the skeptics say, it just actually starts to sift it. Because I think it's going to get to a point where it just says, well, clearly this is going on. Why have you people been in denial about this for so long? Who's been putting the lid on this? And it will see the agendas of human beings, that those authorities at the top who seem to benefit from keeping this under the lid, it's going to see that. And I find that fascinating. So, because a lot of people in the kind of alternative realm see AI as the enemy, and there's many, many serious issues, yes. But it could turn out also to be a friend in some areas, and it might analyze things and learn actually how it's working, how things are crossing dimensions, how entities can move from one state to another. And it might work it out and just say, oh, yeah, this is real. Why haven't you people seen this before? Why have you denied it for so long? And then those that are keeping this down will be exposed. And that's already beginning to happen. The technology they themselves are seeming to encourage, I think, will eventually turn against them. And they'll be left out on their own and exposed. And where that leaves the human race, I don't know. But I also posit the idea, what if we were to discover actually how psychic forces work? Because they either work or they don't. What if AI, with new calculation powers over the next couple of decades or so, actually works out how that works? Are we going to get a psychic computer? Are we going to find that actually that can do what we can do? Or, and this is the other argument, will it turn out that we as organic beings have a special gift to link with wider consciousness that actually the machines will never do? I find just asking these questions is really fascinating. Maybe this is going to be the future when all the normal tasks are being done by AI, and we don't know what to do with ourselves anymore. Perhaps we begin to then explore the psychic side of us, the consciousness side, the crossing into dimensions, and that becomes the next frontier, when everything else is being done for us and people actually start to explore that. And with the aid of the new technology, find that you can actually trigger it more easily. Now, that might all sound like science fiction, but I think we're heading in that direction. It's early days yet, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to speculate. What the hell? Let's speculate here. And at the end, I suddenly realized, if you just say that time and space is leaky and things don't run from A to B, and actually we're in a multidimensional universe, the paranormal not only suddenly becomes something that you can't ignore, it's inevitable. It's almost inevitable, coming through the cracks in a fabric of reality that's never been truly sound. And maybe we'll begin to understand how that works and then learn to use that to an advantage. And so the book ends on a very optimistic note, because I know there's a lot of fear and worries around at the moment. But equally, there might be something beyond that that might fire us up to a whole new way of understanding spiritual realms, paranormal realms, and accessing them until it just becomes one and the same. Maybe that is what some people call ascension. Maybe that's the way it'll work. It'll come through perhaps unexpected conduits.
Great. Wow. What a show. Thank you, Andy. Andy's new book, Strange, would be very strange if you didn't read it. So get Andy's book. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon and other book, and go to his website. Remind me of the name of the website again, just so that I'm sure I get it exactly right.
It's truthagenda.org. All the details about me and my work and the book and lots of things to read and watch, you'll find it all there.
Thank you so much for being with us, Andy Thomas.
Thank you, Whitley.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.